From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love, and we do that by building the Backyard Advantage. And one of the newest players to the backyard is a guy by the name of George Baxter. He is the Chief Innovation and Economic Development Officer at UC Davis, which is a long title. I was hearing that an acronym was created called Cheeto, and he said, no, he's not using that. It's because that's confusing with something you eat.
Yeah, too close to Cheeto.
Cheeto, yes. Well, welcome. You know, so many great things are happening out of UC Davis, but I understand that you are going to bring something new. You're going to be a driving force behind something that's really going to put the entire region on the map. And it's coming out of UC Davis, but it's going to affect all of us. So maybe just a little of your background and what are you most excited about in terms of your new position, what you're going to create?
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the invite, Mark, to this. And this may be the first time you need subtitles on your podcast, but I will try. Do my best. So my background is I have a PhD in organic chemistry. That's when most people usually moan at that point. But I've worked in the private sector, lots of multinational companies and small companies for about 15 years. I worked for 8 years in economic development for the UK government. I was a professor in a business school, and then I moved into this type of role, which was supporting spin-outs and startups in universities. So this is my fourth university. My last university was the University of Edinburgh in Scotland, which some of your listeners may know of. And I was there for 7 years as the chief executive of the university's commercialization company. So I've been here 6 months now. And my job really fits into three parts. One is Aggie Square, which is the new development in Sacramento, which the university is doing in partnership with Wexford Scientific and others. The second part is a venture catalyst team at the university at UC Davis, which looks after entrepreneurship, spin-outs, startups, mostly on the Davis campus, but not exclusively. And then thirdly, the health ventures team, which does similar work on enterprise and entrepreneurship on the health campus in Sacramento. But again, not exclusively. There is quite a lot of overlap between the two teams and the campuses as well.
Well, so let's dive into what you... So you obviously are not from Sacramento. You're not from Davis.
No,
you're
from
Scotland.
Yeah.
But you've been... I think have you lived beyond Scotland, or is it pretty much Scotland?
England, but you know, I won't go into the vagaries of British geography. Yeah, but I spent most of my career in England, actually, and only recently the last 7 years went back to Scotland to work at the University of Edinburgh.
And we're really excited about what's happening at UC Davis, but what did you see in Davis and the Sacramento region and the opportunity, and then what did they see in you that would say you're the right person to put us on the map, if you will?
Yeah. Okay. So what I saw in UC Davis was fabulous opportunity. I mean, UC Davis research income is over $1 billion a year and has been for the past 3 years. That puts us in the top 20 of public universities in the US. But to put it in international context, that's a larger research income than either Oxford or Cambridge universities. So that really does give you an idea of the scale of UC Davis and their breadth. And as the Chancellor was saying only last week in another interview he did, we have the broadest range of subjects as well of any of the UC system. So we have everything. We offer over 100 undergraduate courses and more than 100 postgraduate courses. So we've got a fabulous breadth of activity at UC Davis. But what I saw there was really a university that had a lot more to exploit. I mean, if you're doing $1 billion of research income, you should be spinning out a lot of companies with a lot of venture capital, a lot of investment into those companies, and potentially doing more on the student side as well.
Yeah.
So I really saw that as the opportunity. And Aggie Square, was really the cream on the cake, because there's $1 billion of investment into a brand new innovation hub in Sacramento, right at the heart of the health campus, which means that we can bring together the health team, the Davis campus teams, and also the faculty expertise and clinical expertise. So all the way from the lab, all the way through to bedside, which is quite a unique opportunity for anybody working in this sort of space. I guess the reason I was chosen was probably that, as I said, that breadth of background. You know, I have run international businesses for people like AstraZeneca. I have worked for government, even though it was the British government. I think, guess most governments are pretty much alike.
Yes, yes.
I've been a faculty member in a business school. Originally, I was a scientist. And I've worked in several different universities in this type of field, so I've got that background and experience. The last role at Edinburgh, we grew Edinburgh's entrepreneurship and enterprise activities. For example, our income from companies grew from about 8% of the university's total income to last year 30%. When we looked at student startups, we went from 30 a year to 140 a year, and bringing in $100 million of external investment into that. And similarly, we went from about $15 million a year of investment into our faculty startups and spin-outs to last year, $140 million.
Oh, wow.
And we did the first two exits last year, which brought in about $80 million to the university in unencumbered money. So that's money that goes back to we call him vice chancellor, but our president, who able to do as he was. And in fact, the great thing was he gave us half that money back into our funds again.
Oh, nice.
To reinvest back into spinets.
Okay, so I'm going to regress just a little bit. You and I went out to dinner, or actually we went over to James Beckwith's house. Tracy Beckwith hosted you and I our spouses, along with Barry Broom and Beth Broom, and had a great time. And I got to know you a little bit. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that struck me as to one of the reasons why you may have thought this was a great opportunity beyond what you said is you actually met your wife, your current wife, in America when you were a high school guy or high school aged person at camp. So you had been to America, and apparently you had a decent experience.
Well, I would have to say, and in case my wife listens to this, we met when we were high school. She was a camp counselor. She's from New Jersey. And I went there as a soccer coach when I was 18. She was 17.
Okay.
And we met over the summer. And then we went back to our own separate lives, had our own, you know, usual lives, mm-hmm. marriage, children, divorce. And then about 10 years ago now, I thought, I wonder what Judy Norkin's doing. Mm. So anyway, I looked her up on Google, sent her an email, because it was an email address for someone with that name, and she replied, and we got talking, and the rest is history. We ended up sort of dating a transatlantic for a few years, and then she moved to Edinburgh to be with me in Edinburgh, and part of the deal was at some point we'd move back to the US. This quickly, but then this job came along, and you know, I had been approached about a few jobs in the US, because I've got a few contacts in the US through an organization I was doing in tech transfer with Edinburgh, with Oxford and Cambridge and MIT, Stanford, and Columbia. So I'd been approached about a few jobs, but this job at Davis was really the perfect combination. The potential of the large research income, Aggie Square being the big new physical home, mm-hmm. opening at the end of January next year. So it really was a no-brainer to pack up and move.
That's great. Well, thank you for moving here, and appreciate what you're about to do, because you've been on the job how long so far?
6 months.
Been on 6 months. Okay, so you've already got things going at some level. And I know that, let's talk about Aggie Square. You talked about three different components associated with your job. Mm. And we've talked about Aggie Square on the show a few times, and I have this view that it is, you know, it's about to change the way we look at Sacramento. So maybe talk to me about your vision for Aggie Square and how might it really change the region beyond what you've described in terms of driving some entrepreneurship.
Yeah,
but how could it make us a world class in terms of a city?
So the first thing to say is that we are moving significant portions of our faculty into Aggie Square. So cell and gene therapy, oncology, neurology, biomedical engineering, Center for Professional Education is moving, veterinary genetics are moving there as well. So
I'm going to start to interrupt you, but sorry, just for our audience, so Aggie Square is located where?
Yeah, so we're just on Stockton Boulevard.
Okay, Sacramento.
Sacramento, absolutely.
And it's
right
big.
Right in the heart of the health campus, so it's 1 million square feet of capacity. 600,000 square feet the university has leased from Wexford. There is 400,000 square feet available for private sector.
Okay, so there'll be basically 60% of it will be UC Davis programs.
Yes.
As you mentioned, oncology and other things associated with medical.
Yes, research really around the life sciences. Also, a lot of teaching as well and professional development and education.
So 600,000 square feet. And what did I say? We have 17,000 square feet here. So I'm just trying to imagine how big that is. That's enormous.
It's enormous. And really, I think a testament to the vision of our Chancellor, Gary May, and also Mayor Daryl Steinberg. Probably 7-8 years ago, just before the Chancellor came to UC Davis, and he came from Georgia Tech, and he really had that vision to bring something that Georgia Tech had done, you know, that sort of innovation square, and he saw the vision to put it into Sacramento. And they looked at a few locations. I think they looked at Natomas as well. But the location on what was basically old car parks in the center of the health campus was perfect because it was right in the middle of that clinical expertise. Mm. Also the School of Medicine, the School of Nursing are there. So you've got that teaching, clinical expertise, research expertise. And then what we're going to do on the other 400,000 square feet is bring in the private sector to then be the partnership. And the way I've described it is probably not quite correct. It sounds like we've got two different parts to it. The design of the building and the layout of the building on each floor and, you know, across floors and within floors means that we've actually got the ability to mesh together the university faculty and private sector as well.
And when you say private sector, are we talking about cutting edge technology? Are we talking about what?
Yeah, we are looking to bring in, and we're in conversations, you can imagine, with quite a lot of people at the moment, to bring in research facilities, maybe outposts from large corporates, small companies who may want to move. Our partners Wexford Connect have a part of their operation there called Wexford Connect. It's about 50,000 square feet, and it's a bit like the Growth Factory, an accelerator incubator type space,
okay,
but with lots of wet labs as well.
Yeah.
So the great thing there is if you're a small startup life sciences company, you can come in, rent a lab for, say, 6 months or a year, very small scale, a few hundred square feet, and there's plenty of space for expansion as well.
And that's the kind of things where we're going to discover cures.
Yeah. If you look at the, you know, oncology, you know, cancer cure, cell and gene therapy, a whole new way of treating diseases, particularly cancers as well. Neurology, looking at Alzheimer's and other neurological diseases. So the other thing I should say is that the way that we've located our faculty on there for the first time is that they will be sharing labs. So there won't be like a neurology section and an oncology section. They're actually going to be side by side. And we're really hoping that that will, again, using that word mesh again, but bringing together faculty who are working in related areas but slightly different to spark
the imagination starts flowing, collaboration starts happening, and new discoveries and ideas.
And we're forcing them as well. Forcing, this is too strong a word, but you can't force faculty, having been one. So we were also saying that breakout spaces will be shared between the private sector and our faculty. So we're really hoping to have those conversations with companies who are working in related areas as well. But also I would say that it's not just about life sciences. I am a firm believer that the really amazing things happen at the interface between quite unrelated areas. So if a quantum computing company comes in or an AI company comes in and wants to hold themselves there, mm-hmm. they're welcome. I think by the nature of our faculty, it will be mostly life sciences companies that will be interested. But I think there will be some others who will think, this is a really interesting environment. I need to be there.
Okay, so I'm going to break this down just for myself and just to sort of simplify it. So the faculty, this is predominantly the teachers, and they're just brilliant people. They're professors, they're scientists.
Yep.
And then you have students who are emerging as scientists and, you know, they're brilliant people. It's not easy to get into UC Davis. And then you have the private sector, which are people that are trying to take these ideas to the rest of the world.
Yes, exactly.
And so, yeah, you start making all that happen. How would you describe the faculty today? They're brilliant, as I described them, but are they entrepreneurial in nature? Is that sort of the way they think?
Yeah, some of them are. I think there's a lot of potential in there.
Okay.
What I've found in my experience is that if you give faculty the opportunity to be entrepreneurial, they'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of examples. For example, Oxford University, they put in place a $800 million venture fund, and they went from about 6 spinouts a year to about 30.
Does some of the faculty take their services private and become CEOs or you don't want to lose them.
We don't want to lose them.
Though, innovation is happening right before their very eyes. They're helping drive that innovation, and I can imagine that they see opportunity in that in some way.
Yes, and it's part of my team's job and my job to help them see that, and for us to see that as well. And it's a good point you make, Mark, about not losing them, because that's the last thing we want to mm-hmm. do. So what we have to do is find a way, and you know, this is typically how universities do it, find other people who can come in and work with them, CEOs, CTOs, CSOs, and the faculty can stay involved in the company, but not necessarily have to leave the university.
Yeah, they don't have to go the day-to-day.
Yeah, and also, if you look at most faculty, why do most faculty come to universities? They do it because they love research and mm-hmm. they love teaching.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of them do it because they're entrepreneurs as well. But it's probably smaller numbers than who love the research and teaching. So we don't want people to leave. We want multiple entrepreneurs. We want people to do a sequence of companies if they can, because we want to build up that experience. And we also need to put together this cohort of C-suite people to help them do that. Mm-hmm. And it's part of my team's job to do that.
And I can see why the private sector would be excited about being around all this brilliance, all this discovery, mm-hmm. being there as it's discovered and being a part of taking that to market. It's good for their shareholders, and it's good for, you know, it's just good for society. But from a student standpoint, it's intriguing to me to think mm-hmm. about where your students come from today, and as people begin to, or more, they wake up to the fact that this is the place in the world where if you want to be involved in life sciences and some of these other areas, that you're an 18-year-old, you're a 22-year-old, you better go to
UC Davis.
Yeah.
That is a really good point. You wouldn't believe this, but we were watching a TV program last night, Royal Pains. Really bubblegum TV. Anyway, it helps relax after work. And one of the characters said, oh, you can't give all this up in a winery because you work so hard to get into UC Davis, the best winemaking course in the world.
Oh, that was on TV. It's already known.
In fiction, right. Okay.
Yes.
So, but it's a really good point, because if you look at places like MIT, mm-hmm. part of the reason that people go to MIT, for the excellent science, obviously, but also because it's got a fabulous reputation for entrepreneurship. So I did the entrepreneurial development course at MIT, and I was there middle career, but I did it with students as well. And it was really fascinating that you talked to a lot of the students and said, why do you want to be here? And they said, because we know that there's been like $20 billion companies spun out here in the last 5 years. So we want to be here. We want to be one of those people. And that was infectious. And, you know, we're not starting from nothing. There's a lot of great work going on in student enterprise at UC Davis. So the Graduate School of Management, Joe D'Annunzio on the team there. We've got Aaron Anderson across at engineering who's doing it with students as well. So we're not starting from nothing in the student side. What I'd like to see is working with Aaron and Joe and really build on that and make it much bigger.
Yeah. Okay, so you've described what the facility looks like, and I can sort of imagine being in there and as a guest or as a, you know, somebody that is just admiring what's going on, and maybe integrating in the entrepreneurial area at some level. Mm. But what is this going to look like, let's say, in 5 years or maybe some of these things to create these unicorns and this, you know, this image like what MIT has? Is that a multi-decade type of...
I think you're probably talking maybe a 10-year vision to get there, but making significant progress in the next 2, 3, 4 years. So, for example, we have funding from the health side of the university. We have a funding for a new venture fund, which we're going to put in place, multi-million dollar venture fund. So we are going through the process of getting that set up just now.
Nice.
How do you get that set up with the tax and make sure all the money comes back to the university? Mm-hmm. We don't break any charity rules or anything. So we're setting that up just now. We're talking to other potential investors in that or who may want to co-invest with us. But
and this is not a solicitation.
No, not a solicitation. Sorry,
make sure we had a little qualification there. So
it's just a general
discussion.
We don't
want to get you guys shut down.
No, it's just a general discussion. We're not asking anybody to come. We're just general discussion, the description of what we're doing. But if you look at the vision, you know, I'd love to see, you know, faculty grow in there, more faculty in there, more graduate students and PhD students and postdocs in there. I'd like there to be a really mix of some large companies in there, maybe some large companies. He's putting a small office in there just so they get a chance to talk to the faculty. Lots of small companies growing. Some small companies that have grown beyond this phase of Aggie Square. So we have another 230,000 square feet that we can build. There's another building planned already for the same site. And we have grown space for probably another 1 million square feet. So if you so if you go forward 10 years, what I'd love to see, I'd be sitting there saying, okay, Aggie Square is full, we've got accelerators and incubators and people are coming through those. People are coming from all over the world to come to Aggie Square. We've already had visitors from Korea who want to come and locate here to get into the American market and work with our faculty. So it'll be full of those. We'll have filled up the private sector space. And we'll have grown space, and that grown space will be full of companies that have grown out of Aggie Square and now have their own headquarters in Sacramento.
Wow.
So we want to keep people there. There has been a sort of history here of companies, and I don't know whether you've seen this, Mark, as well, but companies growing here and then moving. Mm-hmm. And we've lost companies to the Bay Area and to Boston and surrounding area. So we don't want that to happen. We want the... not only the physical facilities, but the funding to be here for companies to stay and grow, for the students to be able to come and work for those companies. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's absolutely critical. If you're starting up a company, you need those really high quality workers to come through. And, you know, we've got UC Davis within 100, and also within about an hour and a half travel, we've got hundreds of thousands of other students.
Yes.
You know, Bay Area, Phil Berkeley and others, you know, we've got so many students that could move here as well. So it's that whole innovation ecosystem, the students to be there, the staff to be there, faculty, funding, physical facilities, the political will, you know. We've had a wonderful mayor and I believe the new mayor is just been announced today, and I'm sure he's equally well a supporter. In fact, he was one of the people who helped get the original funding for Aggie Square. So I'm sure Mayor McCarthy will be a big supporter. If he hasn't been officially announced, I take that back. But I believe someone told me this morning that he was...
I heard that too, yeah.
It was official now. They've been counting for a long time.
That's awesome.
But he's a big supporter of Aggie Square as well.
Well, and you know, when we talked to Barry Broom, who runs economic development for the entire region, he's GSEC. He talks a lot about jobs. So you talked about the jobs, I'll call it, of the future, which obviously if these companies are successful here and headquarter here, it's going to drive all kinds of wealth creation, jobs, just stuff that is just, it starts compounding. But initially, for the first, let's call it 3 to 5 years, What do you see in terms of new jobs and job creation?
Yeah, so initially we'll have about 300 faculty and staff moving in from our side. That will grow to around 600 over the next year. When we completely fill the other side of it, which we hope to do in 2 or 3 years, we'll have between 2,000 and 2,500 jobs on site. Mm-hmm. But in the supply chain feeding those as well, you know, that's where the multiples are, the other 4,000 or 5,000 jobs. So potentially, you know, the estimate is once this phase is full, about $3 billion of economic impact every year. And then the grow-on space for equal size mm-hmm. as well. And the really important thing is these will be really high-quality jobs, well-paying jobs, and jobs for the children from the local area to come and really stay, stay in Greater Sacramento.
You don't need to move away to grow your business. You don't need to move away to get a great job.
No.
It's something like Aggie Square really sort of puts us in position to retain and grow, you know, the talent that we have here. And when people come here from around the world, the smartest people, they'll stay.
And they'll stay. And we want to encourage that, that it's not just from California, from the U.S., hopefully I'm the first of many from overseas who come to Aggie Square. But as I say, we've already done a trade mission to Korea and also to Germany, where that Barry was instrumental and his team were instrumental in pulling together. And I have to say, GSEC are wonderful. I've seen many economic development organizations around the world, and I think GSEC are by far the best I've worked with. So Barry and the team, he's built a great team there. So we're hoping to that to be international, because that's actually all the really successful places have been attract those overseas investors as well.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned three different components. I heard Venture Catalyst was the other one that kind of stuck in my mind. I have an awareness of what that is, but I don't think our audience probably understands what that is on the university.
Yeah, on the university. So the Venture Catalyst team, their job is to take and work with faculty and take their ideas and turn them into businesses. Mm-hmm. So we have a number of programs, the STAIR program, the ACE program, the different acronyms that help, that funded by the university, that help to take faculty from a concept through proof of concept to an idea, find funding, and then out into the world as a fully fledged company.
Okay, so I want to just maybe walk through, you know, I want to sort of imagine this. So somebody is on campus, they've made a discovery, they've created something different, unique, and now they see opportunity to turn a business out of it. Where does that get built and who owns it?
Yeah. Well, that's our job really, is to work with the faculty to do that. So if you look at all the components, what they need working with our tech transfer office, they need patent advice, so intellectual property advice.
Right, because if it gets built on campus, the university has some right to that.
Yes, the university owns the IP for faculty. So, but we are very liberal about how we allow the faculty to use that, because we don't want to stop anything happening. So we're very generous and liberal about letting faculty exploit that IP.
So if you get an IP, like a patent of some kind, the university pays for the patent process.
Yes.
And because of that, and maybe because of other agreements, they get to keep that patent and use it for whatever's best for the university.
Yeah, so the university typically, and this is our sister organization to Tech Transfer Office, but they would typically work with a faculty member, look at the patent sphere, make sure we're not infringing on anyone else's intellectual property, that we're not going to get sued. If we're clear to operate, freedom to operate there, we would then be able to move forward in an area, either licensing it to another company, that's one way of doing it, to an external company, or doing a spin out or a startup. And the university would get some royalty payments from that. Relatively small, you know, a few percent, but that would be income the university would get.
Okay, so then this business that is started by the private sector is started by an entrepreneur. It could be a student, could be faculty, could be somebody else who launches it and turns it into something that has value, licenses the technology from the
UC
school,
Davis.
And then at what point does that company move to a different facility? What does that look like typically?
Yeah, so typically we would then look at where we could actually place that company. Mm. So there are a number of incubators and accelerators, including your own, mm-hmm. round Greater Sacramento. We have the ability then to work with those people to say, okay, we want to start a company. It needs to go to AgStart or somewhere like that. Mm-hmm. We look to talk to venture capitalists. We've got a big list of venture capitalists and say, would you be interested in investing in this company? And then help that formation. And so our principle would be looking at the patent, the IP sphere, bringing together the venture capital to sort that out, and helping the faculty member as well find the people to help them run the company if they want to do it as a spin-out. Mm-hmm.
And so now that all is under Venture Catalyst.
Yeah,
is there anything else under Venture Catalyst, or there must be a team associated with running that?
Yes. So we've got a relatively small team, half a dozen people,
okay.
whose job is to do that on campus. I'd hope that was... Hopefully that grows over time, yeah. as we're successful. We have an equivalent size team in the health venture side, which does exactly the same for the health campus in Sacramento. That's a really new team, mm-hmm. which has only been formed. Don Taylor is the leader of that team, my director there. And he's been here for just over a year, and we've just recruited that whole team. So we've got about a dozen people working in that area across the university.
Yeah, and so where do we stack up in terms of that, in terms of... worldwide or on national rankings, where does Davis stack up in terms of, you know, driving new businesses out of it?
Well, I'll give you a number. I always like, you tell me I like numbers. Probably being a scientist originally. In the last 10 years, there's been about $3 billion of external investment into UC Davis spinouts.
Okay.
So that's external venture capital investment. Yeah. That's not university investment. And then the critical thing for me is, we haven't had a mechanism to get a substantial return from that, mm-hmm. in terms of equity in those companies. So what we're putting together is a mechanism to do that, so that we can invest alongside others and that we can get a return, which we then reinvest into research and teaching, and hopefully back into my team as well to grow that team and grow that activity. So that's the model. The standalone model is, over a period of time, it'll take 5-6 years or so, set up funds to invest into our own intellectual property, co-invest alongside others. Once you start getting exits, you can then take your income from that and reinvest back into the team and research and teaching.
Okay. What kind of, in terms of, I understand that the goals of the faculty are to teach and to drive change and that kind of thing, but they're sitting so close to the private sector. Do they have leverage in taking a piece of the company?
Yeah. I mean, the faculty members would get equity in the companies. Yeah. So they get, that's part of the deal. They would get equity. So the return would be eventually when that company sold, potentially, you know, they could become very wealthy.
So you might see the best faculty from around the world want to locate here just because of the economic potential for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, there's a number of universities doing this now, and it's becoming much more popular. But what you need to do, what you need to be, is be a university which has a reputation for being easy to deal with for that. And it's a good point about attracting new faculty and different types of faculty. Mm-hmm. I was involved in interviewing some senior faculty roles recently, in fact, just after I started here, and in areas that you wouldn't necessarily think of as being necessarily entrepreneurial, you know, ophthalmology and that and stuff. But actually, the faculty there said, one of the things that attracts me about here is you have a program like your team. If you didn't have that, I wouldn't come here. Mm-hmm. Because I want to look at starting companies and spinning stuff out, and I need people to help me do that because I'm a researcher and I don't know about venture capital and, you know, term sheets and, you know, IP and freedom to operate and licenses and royalties and stuff. But I've got some good ideas, some good clinical ideas that I think could be very valuable, and I actually want to come here and work with people like you to build businesses out of that.
Okay, great. Okay, and what is the third part? I forgot.
That's the Aggie Square part.
Aggie Square, Venture Catalyst,
and Health Ventures.
Oh, and so Health Ventures,
the people
okay.
doing the similar thing. And the thing about the Health Ventures, is, which is different, is we have this new Investing in the Future Medicine Fund that we're hoping to launch in the next 6 months. And that will be the first time we've had this capacity to co-invest alongside other investors, you know, through seed, proof of concept, seed, and potentially Series A as well.
Which technologies are you most excited about right now that you see sort of developing right before your very eyes? Because the speed of innovation is accelerating, right? Mm-hmm. So I wonder what you're seeing as being someone so close to the action.
Yeah, I think the big opportunity for us and the one we are actually investing in is the cell and gene therapy side. Mm. So the university is actually putting $100 billion of its own money into that area over the next 5 years to support the research side of that. And we're gearing up on the Investing in Future Medicine Fund to support that with investments as well. So we see that as the first theme and the first priority for us. That's a completely new ways of treating, particularly cancers, but lots of other diseases as well. But sort of changing your whole body's approach to how it deals with disease. Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, dealing with surgery and chemotherapy, which is basically, you know, toxic and poison, you sort of reprogram your body to tackle the tumours yourself. So some of the results on tumours have been extraordinary. And the team at UC Davis is way up there in front of that, leading on that. And also particularly in ways of manufacturing these products as well. So there's a lot of opportunity there that we are really hoping to exploit over the next 5 years.
How is AI affecting the speed of the discovery around this genetics?
Yeah. I mean, the I think AI is extraordinary, and I don't think we've really got to grips with it yet. There's a lot of work around how quickly that an AI model can interpret data, for example, mm-hmm. in a way that a human can't do that. I'll give you an example from my time at Edinburgh. When you look at, we had an organisation there that looked at supernova, and they had to examine the night sky, and they used AI to do that because it's impossible for a human to pick out what's the difference between that star field from a year ago and the star field from last week. Mm. There's a million stars there. We're trying to pick out a tiny one pinprick of light which is different. So AI is brilliant at doing that. And then someone said, oh, wait a minute, that's like scanning for, you know, breast cancer scanning. And we supported a spin out there, which spun out and has now been sold to a big German multinational company. And is now becoming common in the UK for breast cancer screening. And the AI tool there allows you to then scan in seconds that would take a human, you know, probably tens of minutes or hours. So they can go through scans extraordinarily quickly and with more accuracy than a human can. So that's one real example where AI is changing, mm-hmm. I think, clinical practice. And I'm sure we'll see the same thing in the US as well.
What's the biggest obstacle? So we've talked about this big vision. It all sounds awesome.
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy. There's obviously, there can be speed bumps and there could be maybe even brick walls. Mm. What are you worried about in terms of getting to your vision? What kind of concerns you?
I think we've got the Bay Area beside us, which is a big draw for people. Hmm. Still a big draw for people. So I think the biggest challenge will be getting people to come here and not go to Boston or the Bay Area. And the second one, is I mentioned earlier on, is that we don't lose people because we can't move them on into facilities that will support the growth, or we can't fund that. So one thing I'm going to look at seriously is how can we grow more venture capital in this area and become a bit more self-standing. Mm-hmm. We don't need to go to the Bay Area, we don't need to go to Boston for investment. So how can we grow that? So keeping people here, getting money to keep people here as well, will probably be the, you know, big challenges.
Okay, so what's sounds super exciting. Thank you. Maybe just some closing thoughts, a little bit about, like, what do you, What do you like about, besides, you know, working on something so exciting, what's your first impression of Sacramento, the Sacramento region? Is it, some people have described us as more like the Midwest, like the a nice hometown versus like a big city sort of feel? Well, I don't know what your perspective is, though, because you're coming from the way outside.
Oh, yeah, way outside. I mean, Edinburgh is about the same size as Sacramento.
Okay.
So similar. So it's a much older city. I mean, you walk down streets. Yeah. Like we lived in the New Town there, and the New Town was 1790. So it was a little bit different. You know what? We love it here. We arrived in April, and then we've gone through the heat wave during the summer. And everyone was complaining about the temperature, and we were like, this is a novelty. This is great. Scotland is not sunny and warm and blue skies. So we love it here. People have been incredibly friendly. I mean, people like yourself and, you know, you mentioned James and mm-hmm. people like that and Barry, who not only in a business sense, but also personally reaching out and saying, oh, come and talk to us. It really brought it home to me in the GSEC retreat that was when Barry brings together mm-hmm. and the chair brings together all of those chief executives and mayors and so on. And how open people were and how open people were to growth and improvement and working together to do that as well. I've really not seen that. I've worked in a few different cities. I think Greater Sacramento's got that real feel about people really wanting to help each other because we want to like help, you know, pull each other up. So I actually feel pretty much at home here. My wife's East Coast US, yeah. so that's New Jersey's quite different from here. And I'm used to the mountains in Scotland, so I can get up into, you know,
yeah.
Tahoe and even the coastal ranges, go Berry Essen over to the coastal range and stuff. So I think the Central Valley, whenever my wife and I drive around, we see it's got a real beauty, which that flatness has actually got a real beauty. The sort of monotony of the trees and stuff, you know, the million trees. It really has a very distinctive character. And Sacramento is a city, and Davis and the other cities in Greater Sacramento have been incredibly welcoming to me. I've not felt out of place. We've loved being here. You know, hopefully we'll be here for many more years, and we're really settling in. I mean, thanks to people like yourself for being so open and welcoming to us.
You betcha. So last question is just like, what did I not ask you that would be good information to get out to, let's say, the small business, entrepreneurial venture community, or maybe just the residents of the region, because that's kind of who our audience is. Anything
yeah.
I didn't ask?
Yeah, okay. One thing I will say is we're taking the keys to Aggie Square end of January. We're still on track for that. The grand opening will be early May. So if you look at our website, just put in Aggie Square, you'll get the website. Look out for the date of the grand opening and please come along. We're having a whole day. We're opening to the public. Oh, and the thing I forgot to mention, which I should mention, which is incredibly important, is the community relationship in this has been absolutely vital. So there's a community benefits partnership agreement which has been put in place between the city, Wexford and UC Davis, and the local community groups as well that were vital to do that. So that's hopefully that does things like make sure that we all the materials that we use for Aggie Square were from a local, most of our local area, that we employ a certain proportion of local people in some of the jobs, that we bring on apprentices. So for example, we've got about 18 new apprentices from the local area working on site, which is 80 people who've got like a whole new career because of what we're doing, which is fantastic when you meet them. I mean, it's really heartwarming when you meet young people who have now said, I've now got this fabulous job because of what Aggie Square has done for me. And also things like helping to keep people in their homes. So there's a lot of home improvement work going on, a £50 million fund to help, you know, people keep people in home, which we'll raise with the city. And the city's putting a lot of work and effort into this. They've been fabulous partners as well. So I did miss that out, and I should have. And we were focusing on the entrepreneurship side, but the community side, because in Aggie Square, we'll be open to the public. So you can walk in, you can use the Wi-Fi, get a coffee, meet with all your friends. If you want to have a more formal meeting and use some of our meeting spaces and meet the teams, Wexford are donating each year $1 million worth value of meeting room space. Wow. So if you want to have an event, show a movie, have a meeting in your community council, your poetry club or your chess club or something, whatever you want to do, you know, you just want to meet, hang out with your friends, come to Aggie Square. The design is fabulous. A lot of it's behind glass. You'll be able to actually watch people work, which will be a bit strange for them probably. But I think it will give a great feel for the energy and the quality of the work that's going in there. And we want to encourage local people to come and be part of that. So there are no fences, there are no barriers, there are no gates. You can walk in the front door, you can come to the cafe, get a coffee, whatever. And we're hoping that people do that. But watch out for the opening early May. And please come along and have a tour and talk to us and talk to my team as well.
So exciting. George Baxter, welcome to town. And
thank you.
We're lucky to have you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage. And of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.